This is Under Understood. Hello.
Hi, Adrienne.
Hey, Adrienne.
Regina's still traveling. She'll be back soon. But today I have a new segment.
A new segment.
Yes, finally. Someone other than me.
Well, this actually came from a link that you sent me. I think because you knew that it would upset me.
Right. Okay. Yes. That's something I do.
And also, I should clarify that this is really an installment of an old segment that Billy debuted on our Patreon feed.
Oh, okay. So, all right. That's fine.
So Billy's still infecting the podcast with segments.
Yes.
Just through the back door.
This is right. All part of my plan.
Okay.
But this segment will be new to listeners on the main feed.
Okay.
What segment
great.
Is this?
The segment is literal Jerry Seinfeld.
Yes.
Billy, can you explain literal Jerry Seinfeld?
I would love to, yes. On literal Jerry Seinfeld, we take an observation about something relatable, much like the premise of a classic Jerry Seinfeld bit, and we take an earnest, in-depth look into what is, in fact, the deal with it. Often, you know, with surprising results.
That's right. And the topic of today's literal Jerry Seinfeld is airport food.
Yes. Hold on. Oh, wait. I got to get the...
Yeah, do you have the voice?
Okay, here.
Can you make the voice do the thing? Say the thing?
What's the deal with airport food?
Oh, my God.
Wow, that was so loud.
If you're wondering where your Patreon money goes, it's so that we can pay Jerry Seinfeld to do the intros to our segments. Obviously.
No, I feel like I should explain this isn't actually Jerry's voice. And it's also not an AI voice trained on Jerry's voice like you may see as like a thing that's happening in the news right now. This is a synthetic voice named Will from a company called Acapella Group. It just happens to sound like Jerry Seinfeld when you change the preferences on it to make it sound like Will is yelling from far away. So,
it's pretty good.
Full disclaimer, this is not Jerry Seinfeld's voice, and we did not train an AI on his voice.
Right.
Hit us with it one more time.
Oh, of course.
What's the deal with airport food?
Okay.
I mean, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. So, not a real Jerry Seinfeld voice, but as you might imagine, airport food is actually the premise of a real Jerry Seinfeld bit.
Oh, please play it.
Do the people that work in these little shops in the airport have any idea what the prices are every place else in the world? Yeah, $14 tuna sandwich. We think that's fair. That's what we charge in our country.
He's really ruminating. He's like, he delivers that tuna line and he like paced the stage like three times, like back and forth.
Right. So this was posted by the Laugh Academy and they've written that this is from Jerry Seinfeld. I'm telling you for the last time from 1999.
Timeless.
Billy, John.
Uh-huh.
We all live in the New York City metropolitan area.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
I would like to know what your strategy is for airport food.
Okay.
Do I have a strategy for airport food?
Like if you're flying, are you buying food? Are you making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich?
Are we talking about
if you're
personal?
Buying food at the airport, what are you buying?
Yeah.
Both.
Personal travel or work travel?
Either. Is it different if you're traveling with somebody?
Yes, definitely different. Company
Amex. You can
write it. Yeah.
Yes. Completely.
Okay. Explain.
I think almost always mine is like go to the deli thing. There's the Fresco. What do they call them? Is it SIBO? Is that the name of the chain?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Go to the SIBO, get a turkey, the
is
most
it
innocuous
SIBO?
Looking.
Isn't that a bacteria? I thought it was Chibo.
Maybe it's Chibo.
Chibo?
Right? We're going to hear from the Chibo fans after this one. I get a Chibo turkey sandwich, shove it at the top of my bag, and eat it sadly on the plane. That's my entire strategy.
That sounds disgusting.
Yeah. Oh, extra mustard packets are essential.
What? Tell me about that sandwich.
There's nothing to tell. It's like there's always too little stuff in the sandwich. It's mostly bread and it's usually soggy.
And how much does it cost?
But it will be like $2 cheaper than what I would pay for it on the plane. It's probably $12 or $13 in the airport.
Okay. Is that a good price, you think?
No, it's too much.
Okay. Well, would you still agree that the food is often expensive?
Yes.
What do you think is the markup at the airport?
It has to be like a 200% markup, right?
Okay. So that means that...
That my $12 sandwich was actually $4?
Yeah. I was going to try to do that with a much simpler example and was struggling. I was like, okay, so a $1 bottle of water would be $3?
Yes.
Definitely. But also it's more like a $3 bottle of water would be.
Right.
What, $9?
Right. We already live in a HCOL area. Anyway, I would agree. I flew out of LaGuardia recently and I was buying some terrible packaged breakfast food that I can't remember and just the worst coffee that I had to dispense myself from a kiosk. And the person in front of me was wearing like a construction yellow neon vest thing. And he was talking to the person behind the counter about how high the prices were. And he was buying like a wrap or something. And I just kind of thought that this was a fact of life. Like airport prices, they're higher. They've got you where they want you. Mm-hmm. Nothing captive you can do audience. About it. Absolutely captive. Like, I just thought it was eternal and had been going on forever. But did you know that before 2020, stores in the three major New York City airports, JFK, LaGuardia, and Newark, were technically not allowed to charge more than quote-unquote street pricing?
I have questions.
Yeah.
Which street?
Oh, that's a good question.
Quote, currently, airport concessionaires cannot sell goods at a higher price than those available locally outside the airports, end quote. That is from TR Business, a travel retail publication describing the state of things before summer of 2020.
But what, based on what? What is the actual criteria?
Yeah, the enforcement seems difficult on this one.
Right. So the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, which runs the airports and the World Trade Center and other major methods of getting into the region, had this requirement that businesses had to charge what they were charging outside the airport. And if they didn't exist outside the airport, they were supposed to charge something that wouldn't surprise people to see outside the airport.
Is this like a law or is this like terms of the lease of like being a vendor there?
Yeah, this
like
is
where
the
do these rules
terms
come into play?
And conditions of operating out of the airports.
Okay, so
the
this
Port
is...
Authority, they have kind of a convoluted model where you have like a base rent and then you also pay some percentage of sales that may increase the higher your sales get. It's, as you could imagine, it's like an insane nonsense racket because there's just so much captured money to be had inside the airport.
Right.
That the spaces are very popular and it's usually easy to get businesses to take those spots in the airport. And so the Port Authority just rakes it in from them.
Okay, so it's not technically a law, but it's a rule enforced by the Port Authority, which the public has some control over indirectly.
Correct. The Port Authority is a public agency.
Yeah.
So June 2020, everything changes. The Port Authority of New York and New Jersey votes that businesses inside the airports can now charge street pricing plus 10%.
What?
Okay. Like,
I have so many questions. Where did the original rule come from and what prompted a 10%?
Also, allowance. Yeah, who was like this original rule is going so well. Everyone's yeah. playing so fair. Jerry uh-huh. Seinfeld definitely isn't making jokes about it.
Yeah.
We can give them an extra 10%.
So the thing that triggered the 10% was another regulation. 2018, they voted to increase minimum wage for airport workers, going up each year and ending at $19 an hour in 2023. So there was, I'm guessing, some complaining by businesses in the airport saying their labor costs are going up, they should be able to charge more. And so the Port Authority, like, commissioned a report from some consultants, and the consultants were like, you should charge 10% surcharge on top of street pricing. Okay. So to recap, in the past, like, the whole time that we've been flying until a couple of years ago, a sandwich inside the airport, John's turkey sandwich inside the airport, should be the same price as that same sandwich outside the airport. But now that sandwich could be a little more expensive inside the airport, specifically 10% more expensive. The other requirement was that businesses are supposed to offer a, quote, value item. So like a combo meal or something that's a little bit cheaper, whatever. So
this is not being enforced. There's no way that this is being enforced.
I don't know why you would say that, John. Perhaps you should take a look at this tweet. Would one of you like to read and describe this tweet?
The date is July 7th, 2021. The tweet is from someone named Cooper Lund. And the tweet says, LOL at all of this, including the additional 10% COVID recovery fee that doesn't go to workers. And it's a photo of the iPad menu of, I guess, an airport restaurant called Beer Garden. And at the bottom, it says COVID-19 recovery charge, 10% of items ordered added to bill, not a gratuity for employees.
Okay, so the prices displayed are not reflecting the additional 10%. Is that correct?
That seems to be the case, yeah.
Okay.
And what are those prices? Perhaps you could tell us a couple of them. This is a beer menu.
The Hefeweizer at the beginning, which is the cheapest one, is $18.15. And the last one on the list is the Sam Adams Summer Ale Drought for $27.85. Is that a pint?
It looks like a pint in the picture.
Plus 10% would bring this up to almost a $30 pint of Sam Adams.
Right. Small correction. There is a Michelob Ultra for $13.05. That's the cheapest one on the menu, I think.
Oh, sorry. I thought these were in price order.
No, okay. Not in price order. I mean, we're seeing some $18.15. We're seeing a little bit of $15.75. We're seeing a $20.60. I mean, that's a Belgian.
$13.05 is approaching ballpark.
The ballpark of a ballpark, not ballpark of what it should cost.
Yeah, the ballpark.
So anyway, but you did hit on the big stinker here, which is the Sam Adams Summer Ale for $27.85.
Plus 10% for COVID
plus
10% recovery?
For nothing. I mean, COVID was bad, but...
Was that 10%? Is that the 10% you talked about? Like, was that like the premise of why after 2020 it made sense to add 10%? Like, oh, these businesses are struggling.
I'm sure that was part of the conversation when they had their virtual board meetings. But the reason that was like officially cited was the increase in minimum wage. So $27.85 for Sam Adams is very expensive, and...
Is it? Sorry, I don't drink, so I'm relying on you guys. It seems expensive to me.
It is.
This is wildly expensive for Sam Adams. Yeah.
Yes.
But it seems like this would be very easy to verify what the quote-unquote street price of these things are, right? These are like name brand...
Exactly.
...beers. It's not like some mysterious, slimy turkey sandwich...
Right.
That has been shrink wrapped, right?
So this probably is part of the reason why this tweet set off a little bit of an outrage. And somehow I missed all this at the time, but there was a bunch of media coverage. And then a local news site called The City actually went out to LaGuardia and JFK and compared a bunch of prices and found that the markup was more like over 100%. So they found some Pringles for $5.99 compared to $2.50 outside. So that's a 130% markup. Simply Lemonade, $4.69 versus $2.75. Popcorners, $5.49 instead of $2.99.
Yeah.
Bottle of soda, $3.89 versus $1.75. Bottle of Dasani water, $3.69 versus $1.70. You get the picture.
Yeah.
Though New York City is one of those places, I imagine, where depending on where you're pulling your samples from, you could skew it one
sure.
way or the other,
yeah.
right? If it's like a bougie bodega in a nice neighborhood that has a small selection of stuff, I bet you're going to find some expensive popcorners in there, right?
Right. I think they got these samples in Flushing, so not
okay.
so possible that it could have been more money, you know, in Manhattan, possibly on the side lines of the New York City Marathon.
It's a pretty big disparity, though.
But yeah, it's a big disparity. They quote some passengers walking through the airport. Here's a typical quote. "I paid $8 for two Fantas. That's a ripoff," said Felipe Rodriguez, 61, who flew into JFK from Puerto Rico. "It's not like this is freshly squeezed juice. It's Fanta."
Oh, I would love a freshly squeezed
Fanta. In the middle of this firestorm around the vendor beer garden selling this $28 beer, the company that operates Beer Garden and operates a bunch of food and dining at all three major New York City airports and owns Chibo Express. This company is called OTG, and they apologize. They say this was a big mistake. Only 25 people paid that price, and they were all refunded.
What?
And they were all refunded. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, on top of the official apology, all of the attention, the Port Authority says, all right, we're going to conduct an investigation.
Oh, my God.
Into these prices. And Kevin O'Toole, the Port Authority's chairperson, says at a board meeting, quote, "What you can buy in the street, you shouldn't be able to pay more than 10% of that in an airport. They shouldn't take advantage of you because you're captive in an airport." That's the chair of the Port Authority.
Yes.
So they do this investigation. Not sure how long it took, but they put out a press release basically 1 year later in May of 2022. So the press release headline is, quote, "Port Authority announces comprehensive new measures to bolster compliance with street pricing policy at airport concessions."
Comprehensive, you say?
So, the press release says, "The Office of the Inspector General at the Port Authority investigated prices at the airports, found some violations, but more important, found that existing guidelines, quote, were too vague and lacked adequate specificity
yes.
to enable concessionaires to know with precision what they were expected to do to comply with the policy."
I think that's a great point.
"The OIG concluded that the street pricing policy required revisions with greater clarity and granularity yes. to be fully enforceable." End quote. And they released new measures, quote, outlining clear, specific, and detailed steps that must be followed to adhere to the street pricing policy. And this new guidance also says, quote, "It redoubles the emphasis on including lower priced value items at every concessionaire," end quote. So the guidelines are 35 pages. They
oh
are
God.
Called Concessionaire Street Pricing Standards and Procedures Manual. And I'll drop this into Slack and we can all kind of skim over it and just call out anything that jumps out at you.
Buckle up, listener. We're about to read all 35 pages to you.
Yes. I feel like they went from one extreme to the other.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
They went from like, we have a rule with no guidelines, so we can't reasonably expect anyone to actually follow it, to then they have 35 pages of guidelines that no one's going to read.
Oh my God.
So you can't reasonably expect anyone to follow them. Like, I feel like what they need is just like some like system where you can like look up prices, or like they need like a list of approved, like, here are the places you can compare your prices to, and you have to select mm-hmm. a comparable item from one of
well,
these existing vendors, and like that could be audited at any point.
Well, there does seem to be some of that. So I'm looking at section 4.2 concept. Mm-hmm. "Each comparable concessions must follow the same concept as the airport concession location based on the categories below. Travel essentials, paragraph, restaurants slash food and beverage, paragraph, and then the subcategories grab and go, quick service, fast casual, casual dining, premium casual dining, fine dining, casual coffee, specialty coffee cafe, bar, blurred boundaries, food and beverage.
What else is there?
And then other categories, hybrid retail, specialty retail services, and automated retail.
The guidelines seem that to me, they read by somebody who took this assignment really seriously. And they say that the concessionaire must identify the three lowest prices for comparable products and take the average and use that as their street pricing and add 10% on top of that.
How do you know they're the lowest, though? You're only providing three.
Yeah, I know. Also, like, you just, how are, you can always find something lower. Like, you're going to scour the city anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is specific.
I guess it's enough to say, like, you shouldn't be selecting things you know are high. Like, if there are obvious examples that are lower, you should be selecting those as the three. Yeah.
And then they define, like, what you can compare products to. So 5.1 is called comparable products. The criteria for determining comparable products includes the following. One, individual components. The basic elements of a product that must be essentially equivalent to the comparable product, i.e. a cheeseburger must be comparable to a similar cheeseburger, not a cheeseburger with bacon, mushrooms, or other added components.
Yes.
So they are looking for individual ingredient-to-ingredient matches.
But how do you enforce this?
Yeah, there are a very wide range of cheeseburger prices in New York City, or any city, really.
Yeah, like, I commend whoever wrote this long document for this, because it is, like, it seems consumer forward.
These vendors have to submit all their prices to the Port Authority for approval, including a full inventory of all their products every year.
How? Oh, okay, it's once a year.
And then each concessionaire must conduct quarterly on-site spot checks.
Yes.
Of the top 40 items sold at their location during the previous quarter. And random periodic price checks conducted by the Port Authority, including during high traffic travel periods. And there's a process for corrective action. So these seem pretty thorough, though, right?
Very.
So that brings us to the article that Billy sent me, which will also be very interesting to you, John. So I'll just put this
I hope
in
this
our
leads to the
chat.
Chibo turkey sandwich becoming half
Click
price.
On it. Click on it.
Oh my God. Oh my God. It really is. Oh my God. It's the headline. Is this from a website called Hellgate?
Yes.
Yes.
The headline is, why does a plastic wrapped turkey sandwich cost $15 at the airport?
This is your exact sandwich.
Holy crap. This
is this your sandwich?
I usually get one on a roll, but this is the idea. I would consider this, and it's from a Chibo. I'm looking at it.
I was biting my tongue when you were saying that. Yeah.
And it's so this one in this particular photo is a smoked turkey sandwich with Gouda, $14.99. And if you click into the article...
I'm like embarrassed now to have said I buy these.
It's okay. Regina's probably eating one of these as we speak.
Yeah, true. So the article also has a couple of tweets in it. One person complaining about $15.99 for a turkey sandwich. Somebody else complains about turkey and cheese for $16 at JFK. When I asked what made it so expensive, the very nice woman at the register said, it's the company. So at Chibo Express.
Yeah, get them.
What makes it so expensive? So I talked to the reporter who did this story, Chris Robbins.
Oh.
We investigate trivia. So naturally, this story came across our attention.
What could be less trivial than the price of a turkey sandwich in three of the biggest airports in the United States? Come on.
Well, I think you actually elevate it beyond the trivial, which we can get into. But maybe you can start by introducing yourself.
Yeah. My name is Chris Robbins. I'm a reporter and co-owner at a website called Hellgate.
So Hellgate is a local news website covering New York City. A bunch of employees from Gothamist got together, and it's a worker collective.
Oh.
So that's why he introduced himself as a reporter and co-owner.
So this is like Defector, but for local New York.
Totally. So
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they actually like describe themselves as that for people to wrap their heads around. Yeah. It's awesome.
I don't think I've heard of them before. This is great.
I hadn't either. They've been going for a year. They have a podcast. If you're interested in New York City news and policy, check it out. I asked why it's called Hellgate. There is a bridge from Randall's Island to Astoria. Did you know this already?
Yeah, I have a t-shirt celebrating the, what anniversary was it? I don't know. I could go get it out of my closet. I have a Hellgate t-shirt.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds very cool. Apparently it was called the Hellgate because historically that passage was dangerous for boats and commerce and everything. So they called it the Hellgate. And then the news website just thought it was a cool name. And I agree.
Love that.
Do you fly in and out of the city a lot?
More than I would like to, because planes are evil and airline travel is evil, but also it's fast. And sometimes it's like the only way you can bounce around from continent to continent. But yeah, you know, I fly like a handful of times a year.
What was the last trip you took?
The last flight that I took was to visit my friend in Austin, Texas. And this is also where I was very keenly attuned to, because I knew I was going to be writing the story. So I was like, All right, I'm going to be in JFK.
Yeah.
I got to check out some sandwich pricing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's exactly what I did.
And what was your hypothesis and what was your finding?
Well, I mean, if I can go, if I can travel backwards in time to 2021, when I saw a tweet that someone posted that showed that a Sam Adams was selling for $28 at LaGuardia Airport, that was shocking. But like kind of not completely shocking, because everyone knows that airport goods are outrageously priced, especially in the New York City area. But this was like beyond the pale, and everyone seemed to recognize that. So like since that point, I was extra attuned to like how expensive things are in airports. And then the Port Authority, which is the entity that controls all the airports, in May of 2022, they put out this press release and they're like, look, like that beer, wow, that was crazy. Big mistake, an outrageous price. Only a handful of people were charged it. But we're gonna do better and we're gonna really batten down the pricing hatches. So since that point, I've been extra like wary of or like aware of like, you know, getting fleeced in the airport.
Right. I was actually surprised that they said anything. My reaction would have been, oh, it's the airport. They can do whatever they want.
Well, the Port Authority has an immense amount of power. They control some, like, ungodly amount of people coming in and out of the New York City region. So, you know, they can't just charge whatever they want. There are supposed to be rules and regulations around airport pricing. It's just that most people don't realize that. They just think, well, they got me. I'm stuck next to this Chibo at the, you know, at Terminal 5 or whatever, and I have 3 hours because my flight's been delayed. So they got me. You know, I'm paying $4 for this banana.
So Chris saw that press release about pricing, and he thought, oh, cool. There's an inspector general report. Lots of agencies have offices of the inspector general, and they do investigations and they release reports, and they're usually pretty juicy.
Yeah.
So he goes to read the report and he can't find it.
What do you mean you can't find it? Like it's supposed to be accessible, but it's not?
Normally when an agency says, we've detected some mistake or corruption or problem, we're going to investigate it. There's a separate office the Office of the Inspector General at the Port Authority. Their job is to be the ombudsman and investigate what happened and put forth recommendations to correct it. And usually they put out a report. This is across all levels of government, across, I mean, maybe local, not local government, but across state and federal governments. When your agency has a problem, you go through an investigation that's usually private, and there's usually a report that's public. Mm-hmm. And so, especially for something like this, where, you know, the prices are not secret, we pay them, everybody sees them. Like, they took a year. They supposedly did this investigation. They did enough work to come up with a 35-page set of guidelines, but we don't have the actual investigation.
Right.
We don't know what their process was, and we don't know what they found. So usually that's news. Usually an agency will do that investigation. They have the resources to go around and make a comparison and do a really thorough job. And then they put out a report, and the report is 50 pages, and the New York Times reads it, and the New York Post reads it, and Hellgate reads it, and then they all write up their stories. And that's what Chris was expecting in this case.
And generally when they put out like a report, it's like damning, juicy information that deserves to be unearthed and discussed in public because, you know, generally it means something bad happened and they're taking steps to clear the air and rectify it. In this case, I was like, huh, it's so weird. This press release doesn't have any link to the report or like doesn't really say anything explicitly about what else they found. So I asked them for it and I asked the Port Authority for the report and they wouldn't give it to me. So I somehow found their number, called them, and the person who answered the phone was like, what? Like, no, we don't release those. And like hung up pretty abruptly. And I was like, huh, all right. So I went through the press office and the Port Authority's press office and I was like, can I see this? And they're like, I think you're gonna have to file a records request for that. So I filed a records request for it. They denied me. I appealed, and they denied that appeal. And then Hellgate became lucky enough to be represented by a fancy pants law firm named Ballard Spahr. And I told our attorney, Leslie, like, hey, I filed this request for this report and they're not giving it to me. And she was like, oh, let me try. So she tried on our behalf. She was rejected. She appealed. The Port Authority rejected her appeal. And so there's basically nothing left to do but sue or write a blog post. And so I wrote a blog post and we're thinking about suing.
That age old choice. Sue or blog.
Do you think there is a report?
That's a great question. I think there might not be because because I spoke to the person who tweeted the photo that started this whole mess, Cooper Lund, the person I mentioned before. And Lund was telling me that they were never contacted by the Port Authority after that tweet. They were never contacted by the Inspector General. And again, generally these were, like, when these reports happen, they start from like square one and they talk to everyone they can about whatever issue they're analyzing. And then they like work outwards. But the fact that like they didn't do that makes me wonder how robust or how not robust this fact finding mission actually was.
I was very much in favor of suing to get the answer to this because it's complete bullshit to not release this report.
Well, does he have any guesses as to why they don't want to release this report?
My suspicion is that they didn't do a report or that it's really sloppy and would look...
But then what are these 35 pages from? I don't understand.
The public needs this information. The fact that there's a Jerry Seinfeld joke about it, like... Jerry Seinfeld doesn't mess around. He's not going to do jokes about things that aren't palatable to a very large audience.
So I think Chris and I both had the sense that the agency doesn't want to release this report or whatever they have if it's not a report, or maybe they don't have anything at all because it would make them look bad. He didn't say that in so many words, but he did say that it's long been sort of seen as kind of an arm of corruption.
Mm.
So the Port Authority was the agency mixed up with Chris Christie forcing a traffic jam on the bridges for the George Washington in order to punish a political enemy. It's just a massive, kind of opaque agency with a ton of money running through it. There are political appointees at the top. And Chris said if he had millions of dollars to do journalism, he would hire three reporters just to cover the Port Authority because there's a lot happening and a lot of it is not in the public light.
Mm-hmm. What are they skimming off the top of these turkey sandwiches?
Anyway, I was really pushing for Hellgate to go through with suing over this. And Chris said, well, you know, we think maybe we should save our stand, our big grand stand for a bigger issue than a turkey sandwich.
Which he's like, listen, this like fancy law firm just agreed to do some pro bono work for us. We're not going to push that with a turkey sandwich issue.
But I was like, you should just crowdfund it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm.
I still question whether that's a great use of,
of the crowdfunding. The crowd. Yeah. Yeah.
For a subscriber-funded publication.
I mean, listen, if there's anything we've learned from the last 10 years, it's that, like, memes get shit done.
That is what we've learned in the last 10 years. You are correct.
Okay. So the last thing that I put to Chris was the economics of airports. I've read that these retailers, these concessionaires, you know, they're paying high rents. They have extra regulations to deal with. They have higher labor costs. And the counterargument is, well, it's really expensive to operate at the airport, and therefore they have to charge higher prices.
There's some truth to the fact that airports are kind of inherently hard to get to, and that food and people have to be screened by security. But if this was true, then why not just let us see the prices of that they're working from? Like, you know, they're able to get street price plus 10% because, like, they have shown the Port Authority comparable pricing for goods. And it's the lowest comparable pricing, and the Port Authority has approved it, and all of these checks have happened, supposedly. So, yeah, so, like, let us see the books. Like, I'm sympathetic to that argument, but like, we also asked the you know, airport sandwich provider, the massive vendor that sells things in the airports that the Port Authority controls, and they wouldn't let us. Like, they wouldn't even tell us the turkey sandwich pricing. So, like, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, sure, but then can we see it? Because we're supposed to be able to see it.
Did he determine what, by his estimation, the price of this turkey sandwich should be?
Like, what a comparable turkey sandwich would cost out in the world?
Yeah, like, if you were to take an honest shot at doing the process, if you were tasked with fairly assessing the price for this turkey sandwich, you find, you gather information about what turkey sandwiches cost across the city that are of comparable quality. I would say a comparable quality is like a Pret sandwich. Is that fair?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. I've never eaten one of these. John, is that fair?
I think that's probably the best comparison, but not in quality. Like, these have less stuff in them. I can't tell you, I can't say I've had a comparably bad sandwich anywhere near these airports. So, like,
yeah,
I guess that is a flaw.
I guess, like, if you make a sandwich that doesn't exist in that size in anywhere else in the universe,
yeah,
how do you compare it to anything? There's like if no one else in their right mind would make an egg salad sandwich the way you're making it with a dollop of egg salad, yep, what are you even comparing it to?
Yeah.
Chris did throw out the number $10, and even $10 is kind of a lot, he said.
Mm. What is it at Pret? Let's see.
So their egg salad and arugula sandwich, which looks much more robust, is $12.
Oh, wow.
So.
Okay. So.
That's kind of like approaching the 10%.
Yeah.
It was a 13 in that tweet.
Yeah.
But we're saying the size of a Pret sandwich is probably much larger.
Well, I think the amount of egg salad in the sandwich and the amount of arugula is more generous.
But see, this is even more reason, like, if it is within the, like, why would they not have the report to let us know this? This is all about just transparency, not about whether we're getting Chibo on the hook or not. Yeah.
And that's why it's not trivial. This is, we're talking about a giant public agency. They're supposed to be answerable to the people.
Adrian, I'm going to be flying in about 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
How can I contribute? What should I be looking for and asking while I'm in the airport?
I'm also going to be flying in about a week.
So Chris had a funny idea, which was to just check the price of bananas at all the different stores.
Because they're all basically the same.
Yeah, because a banana is a banana, and they're usually 20 cents around me.
There's no way an airport is charging 20 cents for a banana.
That's an easy one. You'll have to measure the banana, though. Bring a ruler. Bring a little tape measure.
Can you imagine seeing someone at the airport measuring a banana? That's how you get on the no-fly list.
Under Understood is Adrian Jeffries, Billy Disney, Regina DeLay, and me, John Lagomarsino. Our editor is Ryan Manning. If you've got a mystery for us to solve, an oddity you want us to look into, we want to hear about it, email us hello@underunderstood.com or leave us a voice message at 212-994-4882. If you like the show and you want to hear more from us, you can follow us on Mastodon. We're at underunderstood at mastodon.social. We're also on Instagram. Plus, you can find more episodes, transcripts, show notes, all kinds of stuff about the show at our website, underunderstood.com. If you want to support the show, you can also join our Patreon, get a monthly bonus live show, plus over 100 episodes of the bonus feed, Over Understood. You can sign up and learn more at patreon.com/underunderstood. That's it for the show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.